This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Go to Squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your brand new website. Holy God in heaven, what do I have over here? A podcast machine gun? I continue the experiment of not forcing an opening rant out of me like the bloody, noxious milk out of some withered up cow's nipple in a factory farm. I'm just going to put out the opening rants when there's opening rants to be ranted. But as an experiment, I just want to see what happens if I just put podcasts out minus some long, rambly thing. I'm not going to do that anymore. I might do it again at some point. I always will reserve the right to go on a preachy, didactic 15-minute ramble through nothingness if I feel like it, but I really am enjoying this. It frees me up because I'm super busy right now. Holy shit, the tour starts tomorrow. I'm packing right now. I have stuff scattered all over my house. I went to Target, bought a steamer, piles of socks, a variety of brand new shirts, underwears, haircuts have been had. I'm ready to go. I'm sure there's a million things I'm going to forget. Inevitably, I'm still kind of procrastinating packing. Packing for a month on a bus, how do you do it? But then again, it's not like I'm going into the Amazon basin. I'm just getting on a bus and driving through the country. So I don't know why I'm treating this like I'm about to go into some underground bunker in the Arctic. Regardless, I'm feeling more excited about this than I've ever been excited about anything in my life. The You Are God comedy tour starts tomorrow. Well, actually, it starts on Wednesday. And of course, who knows when you're listening to this? You could be sitting in the ruins of some post-apocalyptic America right now and have just stumbled on some hard drive that happened to have this podcast in it. You could have a festering, rotting foot, and you were just looking through some dumpster, hoping desperately to find some antibiotics, and instead you just found this goddamn podcast, yet another podcast. Maybe that's what the apocalypse looks like, just the entire country covered in a 5-foot thick swath of hard drives filled with podcasts. Maybe that's what happens. So many podcasts begin to be created that we're all just consumed by them. But if that's the case, I wish you well. I hope you find your antibiotic. The tour starts March 30th in Asheville, and I'm going to do this again till the tour's over, friends. So forgive me. It's March 30th in Asheville. We'll just do it really quick. Starts March 30th in Asheville, Charleston, Durham, Richmond, Baltimore, Washington, Philadelphia, Hamden, Boston, New York. First show sold out. We added a second show. Pittsburgh, Columbus, Cleveland, Ferndale, Toronto. First show sold out. We added a second show. Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Kansas City, St. Louis, Nashville, Vancouver, Seattle, Portland. I think we added a second show. San Francisco, we definitely added a second show. Los Angeles, and then I'm going to be in Maui for doing podcasts at the Ram Dass Retreat. I'm excited about all of this stuff. I don't think excitement is the right word. I feel like every atom inside of me is pregnant with a tiny little joy baby that's about to go shooting out of its pussy into my bloodstream and hopefully through my mouth on stage when I do these shows. I can't wait, and I hope to see you there. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by my sweet and glorious patrons at Squarespace.com who, and God forgive me for this, sponsored the tour I just mentioned, which, by the way, is officially titled the Squarespace Presents You Are God Comedy Tour. God bless you, Squarespace, for being my true, glorious, noble patrons, my father, my mother, my guardian angels out there on the internet. It's an honor for what a wonderful company you are. In an internet filled with trashy, crappy, diarrhea-style, lazy, puke websites created by charlatan web designers, Squarespace has emerged like a triumphant knight exploding from a bloody wound in the side of an oceanic kraken that he just slayed by allowing it to devour him and then slicing its entrails from the inside and burrowing out like some glory mole. That's Squarespace, only they didn't burrow out of a crack, and they've emerged like a beautiful digital rose from the festering skin of the internet that's composed of so many shitty websites. If you've got a crappy website or are thinking about creating a website, if you've got a brand new business and don't feel like getting the infected fangs of some pseudo web designer stuck into your jugular vein, then you can go to squarespace.com today, use offer code Duncan, and you will get 10% off a brand new, beautiful website. You don't need to know how to code. You don't have to have any previous web design experience. That's what's cool about Squarespace. You can make a professional, beautiful, simple website. All their websites have shopping carts, which means you can immediately start selling whatever the thing is that you want to sell. And God forgive me for saying this over and over again, but it always crosses my mind that I know someone who sells their socks online. Think about that. They sell their socks, the things that they wear on their feet every single day. They package these in some way, and then they just sell them to people who enjoy smelling socks, and they make money doing this. If someone can make money selling their socks online, then you should be able to make money selling whatever the thing is that you're creating, your art, the service you offer, whatever it may be. We live in the glory days, friends, because in the old days, if you wanted to sell stuff, you had to build a brick and mortar store and risk being stabbed to death in the night by some kind of rampaging mob of young toughs in a gang whose initiation involves going into your smelly socks store and decapitating you and drinking your blood. But no more. For now, you can create a storefront on the internet, and you can use squarespace.com to do it. Go to squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan, you will get 10% off your first order, and you can start building a beautiful website today. They've got great support, which I've tested out. If you have any questions about the process, you can always contact them through the internet, and they will get back to you right away. I've tested it. Offer code Duncan, 10% off. If you sign up for a year, you will get your own domain name for free. It's pretty cool. These truly are my longest sponsors. And so I hope if you are even teetering on the idea of creating a website, you'll go try them out. You don't even need a credit card. You can go to squarespace.com and just do a trial membership to make sure that the service works for you. Squarespace.com. Thank you, Squarespace. Oh, how I love thee. We're also brought to you by Amazon.com. For those of you who have been living in some kind of frozen iceberg, for those of you who have been frozen, and maybe the people who are listening to podcasts after having been cryogenically frozen, you might not be aware of the fact that there is a service on the internet called Amazon.com. And what this company has done is made it so that if you're going out into the world, it could either be to do whatever your job is, or to go to some park, go to some national landmark, or to drive to some swinger orgy and get covered in the explosions of jizz and love fluid erupting from the nipples and cocks and vaginas of all those attending, rather than going to a chain store and being sprayed and exploded with a foul coughs and diarrhea particles that are stretched from one end to the other of all chain stores. I'll never forget the time I went into a Toys R Us, maybe it was a Best Buy, now I can't remember which, and I saw some infected toddler, a kid who looks like he was in The Binding of Isaac, the video game. If you haven't played it, you should. It's very addictive. Just an infected child, a maggot child, a thing that looks like a well-organized hive of maggots was wearing the skin of a doughy, pasty-faced child, and I saw the child take a PlayStation controller, one of those demo PlayStation controllers, and just cough all over it. Just hold it to its mouth and cough. There might have been little chunks of vomit and cheek flesh that had fallen off because of whatever pestilence had infected this monster's body. But it was as though it's not just that the kid was choking and puking on this controller, it was that there seemed to be some intentionality behind it, like whatever disease was inside of it was controlling it, as though the toxoplasmosis virus that had infected the child's brain from eating cat turds out of the cat litter box a few days before had actually controlled the child, and it was using it to spread itself through wherever the child went. And this is everywhere, friends. Everywhere you go, that's not a baby that you're looking at the grocery store. That is a combination of viruses and confusion swirling together in a harmonized cloud of pollution that is just covering the world with awfulness. And that is why Amazon is probably responsible for at least forestalling the inevitable point when a new form of flu emerges into the world and kills all of us, because they've kept us, at least many of us, from commingling at stores when we don't need to be there. P.S. The horror of the capitalist system is it is given the illusion of community when in actuality all it is a group of people gathered together to buy shit. You don't have to take part in that evil system anymore, oh comrades. You can go to Amazon.com through our portal, located at DuncanTrussell.com. It's in the comments section of every single one of our episodes. And you can buy the toilet paper that you were going to go to the store to buy. You can buy the paper towels. You can buy the Windex. You can buy the cock rings, the butt plugs. They have a huge selection of sex toys, wonderful books. I see what you guys order. Any book that I mention on this podcast, I'm currently listening to The Archaic Revival by Terrence McKenna, can be obtained through Amazon in the form of a Kindle e-book, in the form of a flop book, an archaic caveman style made of dead trees book, or even an audio book, which I prefer, through Audible. You could even, if you want to really double up on this insanity, you could go to audible.com/family hour, sign up for a trial membership, get a free audiobook through Amazon. I don't even know what would happen if you did that, but the point is, it's a great way to support the podcast. We get a small percentage of whatever it is you buy, and it costs you nothing. We also have t-shirts. We also have posters. We also have mugs and a variety of other things. All the ticket links to the Squarespace Presents You Are God comedy tour are located at DuncanTrussell.com. Wow. This is nuts. We did it. The thing that normally takes me days to do, I think I just did it in 10 or 11 minutes. A true miracle. And today's guest is a true superstar. Laura Keitlinger has been on her own IFC series, which she created and starred in, called The Minor Accomplishments of Jackie Woodman. She's had a multitude of comedy specials, including a Comedy Central special and an HBO comedy special. She's written a book called Quick Shots of False Hope. You've probably seen her on Tenacious D. And if you want to go see her live, then you should go check her out at the Arlington Draft House at Washington, D.C. on April 21st through April 23rd. You can follow her on Twitter at King Keitlinger, or visit her website at laurakeitlinger.com, or you could even do both. Either way, everyone out there, please rip open your chests and allow the sweet spring of infinite, transcendent, metaphysical love to go exploding out of your heart chakra like a rainbow blasted from the uninipple of some supreme being existing in a dimension where there is no sorrow, and let that stuff spray into the astral plane and entwine Laura Keitlinger so that for the next many months she feels completely embraced by 100,000 strangers in the various realms of the internet. Everyone now, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, my dear friend, comedian, author, and all-around genius, Laura Keitlinger.
Welcome, welcome all of you that you are with us. Shake hands, know you
Laura.
Yes, dear.
Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family
Hour
Podcast.
You.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm thrilled to be here. And I'm impressed as hell with you because you have your there's a Duncan Trussell Family Hour cup right in front of me.
Yep.
That's been here for God knows how long. There's
long
gold
time.
And shit on
a long
the,
time.
The front, and it's okay.
I got mugs. That's where I'm at. This is
That's making it.
That is, you know, that is something.
I want you to know that.
You can make.
I don't have mugs.
You can make them. They're not that hard. I've got a place. You just send the mug design and they'll send you a fresh mug.
Well, I'm impressed. I was telling this friend of mine about, Okay, skipping. Now I've got nowhere to go. I was thinking about like what I think is making it, and I realized I was about to do a bit. I don't want to.
That's great because I was going to ask you, what is your ultimate definition? That's so funny. I was about to say,
okay.
In your mind, because we have this idea of making it,
right?
Everyone has it in their head, some version of ultimate success. What is your version of ultimate success?
Well, the bar has gotten so low. For me, it's underground. So my version of success would be to be able to give a store clerk a $100 bill, not have them look at it, hold it up to the light, look at it, call the manager over, and then have the manager, you know, ask me to leave for soliciting a minor. There's my bit. No. Let me see. What would be the ultimate?
Ultimate success.
I think just, you know, now like having friends that are really famous and rich, I would just like to not feel embarrassed around them, I guess. No, that's not.
How do you feel? How do you feel embarrassed around them?
No, I feel embarrassed. Like, and God, my friend Nancy Shane said something that I will never forget. It is the best advice ever. That no one is thinking about you as much as you are.
That's for sure.
Because I think, oh, I bet they feel sorry for me. I had a show. I don't have a show. I had this. And nothing's really going on. But the truth is. Especially in the green room, everyone's thinking about themselves and their set and, you know, who gives a damn. But
isn't that funny, though, when you realize that? There's this funny thing when you're doing comedy, and sometimes I'll catch my mind doing it, where, like, I will want comedians to like my set and I will want them to say something kind to me about my show, and it's all ridiculous because when I consider how much am I paying attention to other comedians, especially in the climate of a comedy club when I'm about to go on stage, my adrenal glands are pumping and like all I'm thinking about is this thing I gotta do,
right?
It's zero. I'm just thinking about this thing I gotta do, you know? So that is a funny thing that we want a specific think well, you want I mean the ultimate version of, let's imagine the ultimate Twilight Zone version.
But, you know, I was just gonna say, just to comment on that, what I think is funny is, like, I have, and you've probably done this too, when someone comes off stage and they walk by you, it's a comic or it's a friend or somebody you don't even know that well, and you think they don't feel that good about what they did on stage, you say, oh, that was a good set, right, to make them feel better,
yeah,
even though maybe it wasn't, or and you're just kind of just saying something because they're, you feel like you should. It's a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
But then I feel like if somebody says that to me, I believe it. You know,
right.
Like, I don't think that they're just saying it because they kind of think it wasn't that great and want to.
But they didn't even watch.
Yeah.
They're just saying it as a form of high.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you. But the funny thing is, you can't use that metric. You know, the metric of the, even if the audience liking you, the comics liking you, none of it matters.
Right.
It's the only thing that matters. Is did you like it? And
right.
If you didn't like it, it sucked.
Oh,
period.
That's a good point.
That's got to be the only metric.
Right.
Like, I've been shooting. I'm like shooting archery right now, and
cool.
It's fun, and it's like it's a great metaphor, and it teaches you all this stuff. But you know, I'm reading about how some people like how to train for it and get better at it. And one person was like, you know, I don't care sometimes whether or not I even hit the target. But if my form is correct, that's all that matters to me. If I'm keeping a consistent form, that's more important than hitting the target. And I think on stage, it's kind of the same thing. It's when you're up there, are you working on new jokes?
Yeah.
Are you expanding jokes that you have been doing for a while?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you just up there doing the exact same fucking thing?
And right.
If you're doing the third thing, which I'm guilty of a bunch, mm-hmm. then what's the point?
Oh, I can't. Oh, I agree. I can't even. I was trying to prepare, you know, for an hour, to do an hour, and just doing what I've been collecting, just doing the same kind of material to build that hour of what I think it is, and, you know, inviting people out to see it, I felt it was so tedious. Now I've done it so many fucking times, I'm like, oh my God, I can't, you know. So I always try to have a few new things just for myself because I can't stand it.
You have to.
Yeah.
When I go, if you go to the club, you need at least, or a show, you got to have one thing just for yourself, mm-hmm. even if it's going to suck. How do you write? What's your writing process look like when you're in the midst of preparing an hour? How much time do you have like a specific time that you sit down and work on jokes? How does it work for you?
I do everything at the absolute last minute. Mm-hmm. So, usually hours before, or sometimes if I try to do a few sets and then, you know, tape and then try to remember what worked, you know, but I find it also hard to listen to myself. So I'll just ask my boyfriend if he taped it and what did he think was good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But I, you know, what we were talking about earlier, I wanted to bring up is one of the most humiliating things I think in all of life is, writing a bio or writing, a resume, like just having that. I mean, I've spent a lot of time on that just recently because of just for doing, I'm good, about to do this, the Halifax Comedy Festival.
Right.
And just, writing down, you know, like a list of bullshit and trying to make it, sound like it's, you know, I
sound like what? Sound funny or sound interesting?
Yeah. Sound interesting.
Yeah.
And I was laughing, just, you know, like reading over some of my old bios, like a true original, you know. Like,
oh,
and,
yeah.
And a triple threat, you know, all that shit.
A triple threat.
Yeah, and that's, I had my friend Jeremy Kramer help me write my last one, and I said, let's have it really cheesy, like a triple threat. And he said, Laura's proved herself to be an Amber Alert in the,
right.
Bullshit. Because it's all just bullshit, you know, you're just like trying to just,
it's bullshit.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It's just awful. I know.
It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter if you went to Galilee, raised the dead. It doesn't matter if at some point in your life you levitated, if you've time traveled, if you've gone to the moon. Mm-hmm. If you're a comedian, none of that shit matters. Right. All that matters is when you're on stage and are you what's happening while you're up there. I think that's one of the glorious things about it, because when a comedian's performing, no one's looking at their bio being like, God, look at this amazing biography. God, they're amazing. They're so funny. No one cares.
I know. And, you know, sometimes if I read the bio of a younger comic, I remember thinking, I know, like trying to stuff it with, you know, every little thing, you know, stand up at this club and, New York, all these clubs, and just how much it meant then. And then you realize, oh, but everybody does this crap, and it's,
and no one cares.
Yeah,
No, I don't think, I could be completely wrong here, but when a person's going to see a comedy show, they're not spending any time on the bios of the performers.
I know, that's like just, it's such an antiquated, it's almost like a playbill for a play nobody gives a shit about. And I've always wanted to just say, I recently, the past few years, I've been just throwing shit against the wall, hoping to sell something. Can I just use that as a bio?
That's it.
Yeah.
That should be your bio.
Yeah.
Just that. Because no one gives a fuck about triple threat, multi-hyphenate. No one gives a shit. No one out there cares about any of that. I mean, God, think of like, does anyone, no one looks at like the bio of Led Zeppelin. No one's looking at the bio of any other,
I know.
When you're going to look at like Andy Warhol or you're going to look at Picasso or some famous artist, you're not like, can I see their bio? I just want to take a real look at what they've done before this painting.
Yeah.
You're just looking at the thing itself.
It's so fucking true. And it's also, I mean, it comes from having a resume, right? Is anybody going to actually look and said, oh, I see you were at the Punchline in San Francisco.
Interesting.
How did you,
What was your opener at the Punchline? What did you open with then?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really interested. This is the corruption of the entertainment industry mixing in with art, I think, is this is what happens with, because it's like some manager or some agent at some point was like, we've got to have a good bio and we've got to appeal to business people, because when you're doing this style of entertainment, or if you're doing anything that involves trying to sell a show, or there is this group of people who have to like sell you like some kind of stock or some form of capital that they're trying, or some trade. It's really weird, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So they're the ones who come up with the language, like triple threat, all of that shit. But that's a whole culture, isn't it? There's a whole culture of that out there.
You know, I was drinking with this friend of mine, and I'm not even sure who it was, but I don't know who I drink with, but he had said something that I thought was pretty funny. It's kind of a letting yourself off the hook. He said, well, you know, I'm going to be like Van Gogh. I won't be appreciated until I'm dead. And I thought, wow, that must make it a little bit easier for you. But, you know, I can't actually even picture that going down. It's like, oh yeah, like there'll be this exhibit and your set list will be on the wall and somebody will be listening to you go, oh God, yeah, the Passover joke about his girlfriend's a dog biting his balls under the Passover table. And, you know, like that, how could you even put yourself on that level?
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That is the most.
I'll tell you later who said it.
Oh my God. I'll be appreciated after I'm dead.
Yeah, like Van Gogh.
Get the fuck out of town. Like, that even matters.
I know.
I mean, there's a whole, what is the philosophy? God damn it. I keep forgetting this guy's name. It's Stoicism. It's a philosophy called Stoicism. And there's a great book called, it's Marcus Aurelius, who wrote a book called Meditations, which is a book he wrote for upcoming emperors, for people who are going to be an emperor. And so it's all this like
amazing
philosophy, and all of it is, it's really cool, but a lot of it is like this whole thing of like leaving a mark after you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think about that.
I know. For what? Or for
what?
Whom? What does it matter?
It doesn't
when
matter.
You're gone.
It doesn't right. matter. Yeah. There's nothing that happens after you're gone. Who the fuck cares? Yeah, nobody cares. It doesn't matter at all. To me,
I wish we could talk more, just you and me as friends, because I think you're so interesting and whatever.
This is why I love podcasts. But
I know.
Just to wrap up the Marcus Aurelius thing, not only does it not matter what happens after you die, really, like thinking about what's going to happen outside of this present moment, you know, that's what causes so many problems. You know, it's like planning, thinking what you're going to do. It's like when you're worried about thinking about what's going to happen after you die, the odds are you're like completely not here at all. You're not in the moment. You're already dead. You're just focusing on something after your body stops working.
You know, one of the, and I can't remember which book it was, but in one of the, I think maybe it's just called Hollywood, one of the Bukowski books, about how he said, why do I have to do anything? Why does everybody say, let's go do something. I just don't, you know, I mean, in a very simple way of that, like, that's what can ruin a day about saying, okay, I've got to do these things. I have to do this. People expect you to do this. And he said, why can't I just enjoy being in my hot tub with my cats? That's what I'm going to do today.
Yes.
You know, that
oh
sort
God.
Of thing.
He's the best. Guy had the best, like, it's on YouTube. And he had this advice, like, he's like, sometimes you just need to go lay in bed for 3 days straight. And I find that to be such fantastic advice. Isn't he great?
Oh, amazing. And there was, you know, there was one of his books that was illustrated by R. Crumb. I remember laughing like mad. And it was just this illustration, and it was of a Bukowski, like, you know, putting one shoe on and he just said, okay, now what? It's just like, God, what? I don't know. It's just,
it's the really best.
Good. I know.
He's like he's some kind of like Zen master or something. Mm-hmm. And so it's so nice to have somebody who relieves you of those stupid burdens you put on yourself. Somebody who like spiritualizes. I don't even want to say what he did was like slacking, because he was a hard fucking worker.
He wrote a lot. Yeah,
he would drink and write, and he was like a kind of a workaholic in a lot of ways. But anytime someone gives you a break at the level he does, which is like, it's just, These fucking assholes, man. Yeah. The doers.
Uh-huh.
The people who, like, you've got the goals and the thing, and they're always up to something, and they're God, it's so gross.
Do you ever... You don't ever get on yourself like, oh, I didn't write today, or...
Oh, I sure do.
Yeah.
But then the best writing happens spontaneously. The best podcasts come spontaneously. It's not from planning. It's not from like, oh, shit, I've got to schedule these podcasts. It's like someone will call, or like, you know, someone will email, or someone... It just will come out of the blue, and suddenly you're recording the podcast, and it happened organically. I just prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of life is fine, too. I just... It's never been, I've never been able to be that kind of doer. You get around those fucking organized sons of bitches, though.
Oh, I know.
Wow.
I know. When a person's, I write every day from, you know, 10 to 4. And then as soon as they say that, I think to myself, do I like their writing? Are they funny? Have I ever read anything they like? I mean, I don't know. I instinctively think, oh, so they have a real kind of a technical way of writing. And so, you know, or maybe they're kind of a type A personality, and that's why, you know, they're able to do that. But then I think, oh, that isn't something I would probably want to read.
Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly.
Or here. Or, you know,
or
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Stephen King, I guess, is the ultimate example of successfully doing that. I don't know if you like his writing.
I do. I think he's probably the greatest writer of this century.
I do, too.
Of the last century.
God, he's great. But he's got a serious work ethic. Like, he sits down and hammers out pages, like, at least 4 hours a day at some beautiful big desk that he has.
Mm-hmm.
But
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, man. He's like, you know, did you ever read the Dark Tower series?
No.
Oh, please do. It's
I
so
will.
Good.
It's well, like, The Shining is one of my favorite movies. I was surprised that in an interview that he didn't like how it turned out.
I
didn't read the book, though, but I love the movie.
You're going to love the book.
I should just read the book.
He didn't like it because it wasn't supernatural. And
oh, really?
Yeah. It wasn't supernatural at the level that his book is, without spoiling it. And like, there's some famous phone conversation where Kubrick calls Stephen King and says to him, what's scarier, going crazy or a ghost? What do you think scarier? That? Because the moment we've got ghosts, that implies there's life after death. The moment there's life after death, there's some relief to the gnawing anxiety of being a human being. Isn't it scarier, the idea that you can just lose your fucking mind?
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. My God. That's fucking... Wow. I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Because anytime there's like ghosts, like anytime you're watching a horror movie
mm-hmm.
where people are getting killed by ghosts,
yeah.
it's always like, well... There's life after death, so the ghosts are kind of doing them a favor if you look at it that way.
One of my pet peeves is the paranormal shows. Like, oh, did you hear that? Oh, my God, did you see that? Ooh, it just got cold. You know, it's like all the same shit all the time.
I met this guy, Aaron, from he's on this show called Ghost Encounters, and he was at the Comedy Store, and I got in a conversation with him, and I hadn't seen his show until after I met him, which is cool, so I didn't have to be nervous or feel weird or whatever because I wasn't aware. The show's a big hit.
Is it really?
Yeah, lots of people love it.
Ghost Encounters?
I think it's called Ghost Encounters.
Uh-huh.
And he's a sweetheart, man.
Yeah.
But I'm talking to him out there,
uh-huh.
and I'm like, how much of it's fake, man?
Yeah.
Come on.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it's fake. You guys aren't encountering ghosts, right?
Yeah.
There's no way. And, you know, I don't think I'm the worst judge of when people are bullshitting me. He's like, it's real. He's like, there's shit out there, man. We've seen crazy shit. It really happened. Some of these places are actually fucking haunted. He's like, there's stuff that happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's real.
But the meter and all that thing, like, I mean, that whatever that equipment is, I was just thinking, like, that. Can I buy a ghost meter?
Yes.
Is such bullshit to
it's
me.
It's bullshit.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I
you ever seen a ghost?
No. But I do... I mean, I would love to. I would just love to see a ghost. I would really love that, I think. I honest to God would. I would love to.
Did I tell you?
I love horror films. I love all that. I would, you know. What?
Did I tell you my ghost dream?
No.
My ghost encounter?
No.
Sorry, guys. I'm going to repeat it really quickly, though. I was in New Orleans.
Which is the best fucking place for something like that.
Haunted fucking city.
Yeah.
And I had a dream. And in the dream, I'm in the Arctic. A body falls out of the sky. In a body bag. I unzip the body bag. There's a suicide note in the body bag that this person has, like, put in the body bag. And the suicide note is written about my girlfriend. And the guy's like, now you'll know I really love you. And the corpse in the body bag after I'm reading the suicide note and getting really pissed because it's like, don't hit on my girlfriend with a fucking suicide note, you asshole.
Whoa.
I'm getting jealous. He comes to life, wakes up, seems like kind of like out of it. And I like, escort him out of the Arctic. You know, it's a dream. Like, there's like a, you know, the Arctic apparently like meets a city street or something that you can kick him out of. And then later in the dream, I go to his, he works at a record store. Mm-hmm. And I go there and I use the, what do you call it? This thing on a can, like the top of a can.
A tab
to cut his face up.
Weird.
In a record store. So there's the crazy dream. It was crazy enough that when I woke up, I wrote it down, which I rarely do. So that, we're talking to a bartender at the top of our hotel, the Omni in New Orleans, a great hotel. And the bartender's like, it's like, you want to hear the ghost story that they don't want us to talk about?
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah. And she's like, well, yeah, a guy in Katrina hacked up his girlfriend down the street and then came here and committed suicide, jumped off the building with a suicide note in his
pocket. I remember seeing that. I remember watching that on something about that.
Yeah, man. I didn't know that. I was not aware. There's nothing in my brain. And I had that fucking dream. So to that's my ghost encounter.
That is really incredible. I had an amazing psychiatrist who, you know, had a degree in everything and would ask me, you know, because she studied Jungian theory, and asked me to tell her to write down my dreams. And I had this dream that I thought was so obvious. I mean, this isn't about ghosts, but I was at a party standing next to a refrigerator in a kitchen, just standing next to a refrigerator and talking. And I reach down and pull a dead twig out of my belly button. And I keep pulling it out. And I said, that has to be, you will never reproduce. I said, what does it mean? I mean, which is fine. I would never want to. And she said, no, it actually can mean a new beginning. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, that's really crazy. And have you ever, you know, this with my, this, I'm crazy about my psychiatrist. I think she's amazing. But sometimes because you're a comedian, if you've been in a situation where someone will laugh and you're, you know, not being fun, you know, when you're trying to just tell them something.
Yes.
And she, I wanted to talk about this instance, which I thought was funny because I'm not so desperate that I need to make my psychiatrist laugh. You know, I actually am trying to learn some things, you know? And so I told her about this dream I had, which was really vulgar and horrible. I was running, like trying to escape this place. And there was another person who was a few feet away from me also running. And then I got to this kind of this clearing in this field, and the other person, who of course has no face, says, wait a minute, you know, watch out, or whatever. And so I say, okay. And then I kind of duck down in the woods, and I see like on this huge platform, like this, it's almost like a metal truck bed that's gigantic, all of these kind of naked people squatting down, and someone is going through with a hook and ripping off their backs. And there's another thing like a half animal, half person taking out their guts.
Jesus.
And she said, so then my psychiatrist said, did that bother you? And I said, no. And then she started laughing. And I was like, why is that funny? And she said, well, you know, it might bother some people. And I was like, oh, well, no, it's not a reoccurring thing.
Fuck.
It isn't. I just am just saying, you know, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, and she's, you know, that didn't bother me because I just think, God, you know, a lot of times I'll wake up and think, God, that would be a great scene in a horror film or something. But I don't think anything would bother me in my dreams unless I kept having the same.
Yeah, it's a dream. It's not real. It's not like you're like, God, what happened in my brain? When you tell your psychiatrist these dreams, she instantly analyzes them like that. She can just tell you, here's what it generally means. Like in Jungian psychology, is it already broken down what these symbols tend to mean?
Yes.
Huh.
She's brilliant. I love that sort of thing. I mean, and then I think also, what were her parents like that she gets paid to listen to other people's dreams?
Right.
That she would actually put herself through that.
It is an intense thing. Jung was fascinating. He believed in synchronicity, and he had some kind of belief in, I don't know, I don't want to say like the paranormal, but I kind of think his experience with being around so many people and studying it it seemed to point in the direction of something greater.
Right.
Have you ever seen his Red Book before?
No.
It's like this, he says he had a kind of nervous breakdown or something. It's a, it's an alchemical text with, it's like a grimoire that he created with all this amazing art in it that he drew, which
I don't even know what a grimoire is.
A grimoire is like a magic book, you could say. It's all like right. I think it's called the Lesser Key of Solomon as an example of one, but these are all these texts that have within them the magic formula that you could use to whatever it is that you want to do. So a lot of times, like summoning various entities, demons, spirits, Satan himself in some of them, like directions to actually summon Lucifer. And they're really cool. They're really fucking cool. They have in it this very...
So is that sort of like spells? It's not like a witch thing or a good, you know...
It could be.
I always think, you know, when they have... They're actually, you know, a lot of... and especially in New Orleans, you know, you can see, you know, a voodoo priestess and all this. And I think when there's such a thing of... There's voodoo and hoodoo. And they, you know, well, you don't just... You know, people don't cast spells, you know, just for evil. And I think, yes, they do. I mean, if they do and if they have that power. I've never heard somebody say, okay, let's put a good spell on this person.
Oh, wow, man. It happens. Yeah, it happens.
You think people would say, okay, I want to put a good spell on.
For sure.
Oh, really?
You
don't think it's, okay.
We call it a blessing.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
Blessing's a spell. I mean, okay. any Catholic, any religious mass that you, a prayer is a spell. You're invoking an entity. Mm-hmm. It's all the same. It's all just magic. Every single aspect. For some reason, like religion somehow doesn't fall under the category of magic, even though it obviously is magic. It's a magic ritual. Mm-hmm. Anytime you go to church on a Sunday, you're engaged in a long form magical ritual.
Right.
It's no different, but just for some reason, because it's the accepted, you know, because enough people practice it, then it stops being magic and turns into religion.
And then why, you know, and two, you can't, for whatever reason, I mean, I think it's a, you know, a cult, but you can't call it a cult religion. Religions, you can't call them cults.
Even though,
really.
If you look at the etymology of cult, it means like spirit. It's the devotion to a spirit. So cult... Religion, magic, all the same thing, which is people like to do these rituals to try to create change in the universe, and it's awesome. You got to try. Have you ever cast a spell before? You ever tried a magical spell?
No.
Oh, it's a blast. You got to do it. You never gotten really stoned and tried to do magic before?
No.
Oh, it's fun. Oh, it's so fun. It's so theatrical. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the great things about magic is it's theatrical. You're acting out.
Do you actually get ingredients and things, or I mean, do you...
Depends on what the thing is you want to do. Oh. You know, like there's God, I did it once, man. So there's they believe in these angels, right? Mm-hmm. Now listen, what's really cool, I think what people miss out on a lot of stuff.
Can I tell people, by the way, that you have a swastika on your forehead as we're talking
about
this?
Yeah, sure.
And you look so much like Manson that I've always believed in you, but even more so now.
Thank God.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah, you have nothing to fear. No one has anything to fear.
Okay.
But the problem with like skepticism when it comes to religion and magic is it's like you end up missing out on lots of fun because obviously.
Oh, well, I think it's fear. I mean, I don't feel skeptical about, I mean, that's, I would love to see a ghost. I would love to cast a spell. I'm not even afraid of like Ouija board things. I've never done that. I mean, I think I did it once a long time ago with my cousin, but yeah, I think it's more fear than skepticism on some people. Or are you saying that about me?
No.
That I'm skeptical about?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
Some fear, people are afraid too.
Yeah.
Well, that's even more fun. God, you're lucky if you're afraid because then you'll really make contact. But if you're, there's all these symbols that represent varying entities depending on what the thing is you're trying to summon up. Mm-hmm. Usually you need to know the directions because there's different entities assigned to various, to like north, south, east, and west. And then facing each of the directions, you can kind of intone You know, there's all kinds of things. I can grab it. I have one of Crowley's Liber 4 is what it's called, which mm-hmm. is a fantastic. Have you ever seen any like real magic before?
No.
Hold on. I'll go grab it. We'll read a little bit of okay. it. You'll love it. See, we need fun things to do when we're stoned, right? When you're stoned, what are you going to do?
And right.
One great thing to do when you're super stoned is to practice magic. And it's all over the internet, all the different things. But I'm open up to a random page here in Liber 4. Here is, what is this? What do we got here?
What does Liber mean?
Book.
It just means book in German?
It's a fancy way to say book.
Is it in German?
I guess that's German. Yeah,
oh,
Liber 4.
I didn't even get it. Okay.
So let's find something good here. So this has got some pretty good, oh, here's a good one here. So look, these various rituals, here's a really simple one. This is one that a lot of people do prior to doing other rituals. This is called the Lesser Ritual of the Pentagram. So in this ritual, it says, touching the forehead, say, Ate.
Ate.
And you can see on the internet people doing this. And the way they do it is they get really serious about it. They go, Ate.
Oh. And then... How do you spell that?
A-T-E-H. I'm probably mispronouncing it, by the way. Okay. This is if you're a Thelemite. This is the religion of Thelema. Touching the breast, say, Malkuth. Malkuth. Touching the right shoulder, say, Vegubera. Touching the wrong shoulder. Touching the left shoulder, say, Vegudula.
Vegudula.
Yes. Clasping the hands upon the breast, say, Leolam.
Leolam.
Amen. Amen. Turning to the east, make a pentagram, that of earth with a proper weapon, usually the wand. You can use your finger. Say, Yahweh. I think it's I-H-V-H. Turning to the south, but the same, say, Adni. Turning to the west, say, Ahi. Turning to the north, say, Agla. Extending the arms in the form of a cross, say, before me, Raphael. Behind me, Gabriel.
Like this?
Yeah.
Just straight out is the form of a cross?
That's it. On my right hand, Michael. On my left hand, Ariel. For about me flames the pentagram. And in the column stands the six-rayed star. And so that's the lesser ritual of pentagram. Now, look, is this real? Hell no. Or is it not real? Hell no. It's just theatrics, and it's mm-hmm. lots of fun to do. Highly recommend it. It's such a blast.
And much more fun than sitting in church for, you know, however long you might on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, exactly. Yeah, way more fun. You just get, whenever I was doing, I don't do anymore, but when I was doing it, one thing I would always do is get super stoned. You get mm-hmm. really high, really high. And if you do it right, you won't remember doing it.
Like, okay, and did you actually cast a spell after that?
Well, I never, that one, the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, I never did that, but there have been times when I've dabbled in like actual sort of like manifestation rituals and mm-hmm. things like that, and it with some success, with some surprising success. The thing is, you can go into, so you go into the magical state. So what's the magical state? The magical state is how every kid is constantly living every single day, which is mm-hmm. that you allow yourself to start drawing connections where there are none. So the skeptic says, we remember the hits is what they say. So whenever there's a coincidence that happens, like, God, I was just thinking about Jack and Jack called. Mm-hmm. How could that fucking be possible? A skeptic says, your mind is constantly processing and you're thinking about shit all the time that you don't remember thinking about. So mm-hmm. it just so happens sometimes the thing that you're thinking about coincides with something in the world and you act like there is a connection. There isn't one. That's what a skeptic says. We remember the hits. Mm-hmm. So getting into a magical state of consciousness is intentionally allowing yourself to fall into the fantasy that there are all these synchronicities happening around you at all mm-hmm. times. And in fact, the entire universe is alive and trying to teach you in every single moment. And so when we go into the magical state,
how do you see that? Like in your mind's eye, how do you see, what do you imagine when, well, like I just see purple, I see like purple lights.
There you go.
That's Is that it? Is that what you... I mean, whatever. No. Oh, really?
That's it. Oh. Well, no, that would be it. So it's not like there's a right way to do it.
Right.
So right away, your mind, you're seeing purple light everywhere. So now in that state of consciousness, inundated with a great purple light of truth, allow the purple light to move through my body to inundate. You could start doing your own rituals, you know? I take the purple light into my heart. I move the purple light through my body down to the atomic, to the subatomic, to the deepest core of myself so that the purple light is purifying, tuning, focusing, and bringing me closer to a state of pure and true realization. And then, so you start like do, you know, and you do it in a kind of like, you change your, if you want to, you can like change, you can dignify what you're saying, make it like, you know, wizardy, you know, like, and now in this moment, I call upon the great light that comes from the beginning of time, 13.7 billion years ago, I have come to the altar of the light, whatever it is.
Right.
You make it up. And then through that creative exercise, you might be surprised what happens. Because really all that matters is, are there results? Let's see if there's a result from this.
Okay.
This is empiricism. So you're like, I'm going to do this completely ridiculous thing. I'm going to like put on a special outfit and imbibe some psychedelic, throw myself into a magical state, intone an invocation to the potential greater truth of the universe.
And this thing that I want will come to me, whatever it is.
I'm going to say, I'm going to ask for something. And then I'm going to see if anything comes. And so then you make note of it. And if something comes, you got to admit it.
Right. Oh, agreed. I will. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Oh, of course.
So like people do, so that's the that's my version of magic. Everyone has different versions of it. It's a totally free. It's a freewheeling, creative super state that you put yourself into where you allow yourself to succumb to every single possible delusion that you feel like having with the intention of creating a change in your external universe using means outside of what you normally use to make changes, even though that's considered magic too. Crowley said anything that you do to cause a change in your universe is a ritual and it's magic, whether it's putting money in the bank or cooking a fucking grilled cheese sandwich. It's all magic. When you're cooking a grilled cheese sandwich, it's alchemy. You're creating chemical conversions in the you're transmuting the cheese, you're shifting the vibrational frequency of the bread. You know, it really is magic.
Well, I think the real, I mean, it, to you know, indulge yourself and have that, you know, kind of meditative feeling and that good feeling, and just to let your imagination go wild, I think that what I would think would be the seeing it happen would be have somebody else think that way. Or to be able to, with your thoughts, make someone else either think of you the way you're thinking of yourself, or bring something to you that you're thinking of.
Yeah.
Or but that might be more of like of an evil spell or something. Or like, do you know what I mean?
Well, the intention mind is like, are you trying to hurt someone? Which you know, that's where it's. And why is it evil? Well, it's evil because the according to many people, and I do believe it. This is why, like, I have friends who like. Shoplift, or like not really shoplift. Like if a grocery clerk forgets to like charge them for something, they'll just keep it. Like, well, their mistake, it's mine. And there's a theory which is like anything you put out in the universe magnified by some amount. You can pick 7, 10, 6, whatever. But there's a magnification echo chamber effect in this universe. So what it means is if you walk out of a store and you didn't pay $3 for the toothbrush that someone forgot to charge you for, you will end up paying $21 down the line for some other fucking thing. That's going to be a very...
Like instant karma, as they say, whatever that is.
Sometimes not so instant. It's going to be an expensive fucking toothbrush. So it's better to go back in and pay the money for the toothbrush than the universe to charge you $21 or whatever. Because the way it's working here is shit's getting magnified for some reason. It's not reducing. It's magnifying. So that means that if you do a curse... And I remember, man, I've had like Satanists, not Lucian Greaves, who I just interviewed, but like real magic practicing satanic witches tell me, don't ever curse. Never do it. Not worth it. It's just the worst thing that you
don't put a curse on anyone.
Never curse. Never curse.
Oh, they call it curse. They call it just don't curse. Like,
don't
not
curse.
Swearing, but
don't
curse.
Curse.
Yeah. Oh,
it
that's
comes
so
back times seven. So,
oh,
like,
I would imagine
whatever you do to somebody like that, you're gonna get it way, 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 way worse.
Oh, of course.
Don't fuck with it.
Uh-huh.
It's way. But on the other hand, if you bless someone. If you start putting good energy out, whether it's in the form of giving them money, giving them praise, mm-hmm. giving them your attention, it'll come back to you in the exact using the same system.
Well, I believe that in on a very simple level of like even like you know, you have friends that really love to gossip, love to, you know, stir
yes.
the shit, whatever. And I realize like hearing things, you know, like even if you go, wow, well that's really, you know, that's juicy news. Saying something or repeating it is a shitty feeling.
That's
and
right.
People don't even realize it, I don't think.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do out here all the time. Like somebody did this and they got this show or did that. And then when you repeat that negative thing, it kind of sits with you too, whether
fuck,
you even
yes.
think it, you know, it
ugh.
Is or not.
Ugh.
And I, this friend of mine, I said, you know what I want to do? We have to like try and see if we can go, you know, a day, 2 days without talking, you know, shit about anybody,
yeah.
just being, not being negative about anyone else. Just try and do it.
Yeah.
And it was fun because my friend said he didn't want to even try.
Well, yeah, it's boring.
He said he can't. He didn't even want to try. It was funny.
It's fucking yeah. boring. But that's considered cursing too. Shit talking is considered cursing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, that's the one form of cursing. So like, if you want to like, it's just when people are shit talking, they don't understand what they're doing. Usually it's some kind of fucking habit that they're, mm-hmm. if they're doing it.
Or a way to get attention. Kind of like the, hey, I've got the, you know, the
yeah.
scoop on something.
Yeah. Whenever I'm doing it, it's like, if I practice mindfulness the next time you're shit talking. Don't stop shit talking. Just let yourself watch the way your body language is and the way your body changes and the way you feel and look at the body language of the person next to you
mm-hmm.
who you're, you know, forcing to endure your shit talking.
Right.
And then you'll see right away, oh, yeah, this is magic. I'm practicing magic right now. What I'm doing is here's a person who knows the person I'm shit talking and I'm poisoning the well is
right.
what I'm doing. So
yeah.
I'm poisoning the well. So the next time this person goes around that person in some way, they're going to feel kind of bad about that person. And you're doing it unintentionally, but the moment you draw your attention to it, it becomes intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ask yourself, do I really want to poison the well of this person?
Right.
I shit talked recently and it really flew. I'm not going to go into details, mm-hmm. but it flew back in my face instantly. Mm-hmm. And almost within like 8 hours, it flew back in my face. And it was like, and then it's like, I realized like, man, that was not worth it. What a hefty price to pay for what for me was like just a low blood sugar moment where I just, you know,
yeah.
it was low yeah. blood sugar.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I find myself, I'm really close to my mom, but I find myself not willing to call because I know there's going to be just all this negativity.
Yeah.
You know, just first of all, she watches TMZ and she gets really upset that she thinks everyone's getting ass implants out here. And, you know, and she hangs on to crap like that. I'm
yeah.
like, no, they're not. They're not getting, I don't know, but don't worry about it. And what made me laugh really hard is I realized like even the things she says, I mean, she's so kind of wired for negativity just from her upbringing and everything. She was asking, she said, you know, there are all these wildfires. How close are you to the wildfires? And I realized, like, I was kind of disappointing her that she couldn't see my house on fire on the news.
Right. That's
you know?
It. That's it.
I was like, and I said, Mom, if it doesn't happen, if my house isn't on fire by next year, like what I used to say about being on TV or something, if my house isn't on fire by next year, I will take my house to the fire and then jump in after it to try
yeah.
and give her some hope.
Sure, she wants it.
Some negative hope.
Yeah, she loves yeah. it. Yeah, this is like Carlin's got a great joke about how he loves it when disasters happen. You know, he's just honestly talking about, oh, I love it. It's so great when thousands of people die. And so if you analyze yourself when you're watching the news,
yeah.
you're getting off on the person who's like on the awfulness that's happening.
Oh, I know. Well, I you know, it's such an awful way to channel hope when they say that there are three, you know, so far they found, you know, in an accident or a plane, they say so far they've found, or they've recovered three bodies.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, is that all?
Yeah, where are the rest? Come on.
I'm going to have to keep watching until there are more, which is so awful. But that's, that human nature, like, I want it to be, oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a window you pick. This is the thing. There's these artists that I've had on the podcast a couple of times. Alex and Allison Gray. They're these amazing, they're visionary artists is what it's called. And mm-hmm. They're incredible. But they're really good at taking sort of the things that you might witness in the psychedelic state.
Oh,
and painting it, you know, they're really good at that. So some people are very good at that.
Uh-huh. And are they in any sort of state when they do it? Like, are they on mushrooms or are they?
I would assume so. Like, I think they're. I don't think they're con. I don't know. Like, if when they're painting, if they're tripping, uh-huh. But it would seem. I mean, I don't know. I can't answer it because I'm not sure. Right. But clearly,
what an amazing thing to do, though,
to paint hallucinations. It's because it's so hard to bring that back, but. Allison Gray has this great idea where she says it's like there's two windows you can look through. You get mm-hmm. to pick. And one of the windows is the window into hell. And that window is it's like Fox News. It's Syrian refugees. It's your own personal problems and the limitations that you might be facing and all the horror of your life.
God, and, you know, by the way, what could be worse just than being in a raft with your family?
Being in a raft with, exactly.
Can't even picture it.
Imagine. Like, that's the worst. Just floating in the, after a cruise and you're trapped in a raft with your family. Or so that's a fucking window, right? Get to pick to look through that. And then the other window that you can pick to look through if you want to mm-hmm. is this beautiful window where we exist in this incredible world, this beautiful world. I mean, just like if you spend 10 seconds just looking at a flower.
I agree.
It's like, what the fuck is this? How is this real? This beautiful, perfect thing. Oh my God. And it's a life form. And I think it might be aware of me a little bit. It seems like it might be more alive than we like to think.
Right. And that's what, I was going to say, I love looking, whenever they find a new species of something, like there's this, a peacock spider. Do you know, they're like 11 new peacock spiders.
Wow.
And they have this little, it's almost like this, the kind of like little light display, like this little screen, this round screen, and they have, and it pulses, and it's incredible, and it's beautiful that this little spider, you know, does this, and I guess it's to attract a mate or whatever. But if you look up peacock spider, just to go along with what you're saying, like that to me makes me feel like, oh, you know, there's so much to just, you know, wonder about and be happy about, because there's just so many beautiful things. But yeah, so that's true. It's just what you choose.
You're choosing.
Yeah.
That's the point. You're picking which one you want. And every single second you're deciding, am I going to look at like the hell realm, or am I going to look at the realm of the gods? And you're choosing. And even if you're in a shitty situation, you can always find something about it that's really quite poignant and beautiful and sweet. It's just, you pick. This is the infuriating thing, man. Mm-hmm.
But you know, I was going to ask you too, like, have you ever had an acid trip where, I mean, that seems like what they're doing is such a brilliant, you know, manifestation or whatever, just such a, to actually be able to, because you can't really even explain it to anyone. But if you could paint it yourself of what you're seeing, it would tell you so much too about your subconscious, I think.
Oh yeah.
Like, what's an example of like the most insane visual you've had on acid?
On acid?
Yeah.
The most insane visual was staring at the roof of my friend's car, which was seething with skulls.
Whoa.
And then that transformed into an above ground view of my coffin being lowered into the ground while my family stood around weeping.
Incredible.
That was a lot of acid. But yeah, I saw that, and that it was like, it was just, you know, classic death trip, classic mm-hmm. death trip. Oh, if only I knew, God damn it. Back then I didn't know what to do. I didn't know. So I didn't get to take advantage of it. So I just freaked out and resisted. If only I died, you know, in that moment you die. Like whenever the hallucinogen is giving you a chance to die,
uh-huh.
just die.
Oh, it's true. Because I had one acid trip. It was my only one. It was so horrible. I was with my friend and we were in New York. And I did the classic thing. It was three of us. And this friend gave us just a small tab. And we did the classic thing. My friend Linda and I were left. We did the classic thing after a half hour saying, this doesn't seem like it's doing anything. So we took more. And then 5 seconds. And all the times in life when you say, this doesn't seem like it's doing anything. If you could go, oh, no. Wait. And just wait. And so then we took another. And then the sidewalk started rippling up underneath us. And it started to rain. And my friend, and you have to be so careful, obviously, of who you trip with. My friend, it was kind of always been a hypochondriac. And she's saying, oh my God, she started doing this thing with her voice. I've got bronchitis.
Yes.
And she's, I need to go to the hospital. And I said, you do not need to go to the hospital. And I said, really, should we go? Should I just say, hey, my friend and I are tripping on acid.
Yeah.
And she also has bronchitis. Can you help us out? And she said, okay, no, we can't. But the worst thing was this happened so long ago, there were payphones. We went to a payphone and she said, wait, I need to call my mother.
Classic.
Yeah. And her mother had died a year before.
Ooh, la la.
And so that I'm sitting there, geez, I don't know if I have enough change for death for you to talk to your mother from wherever she is. How much would that cost? But I couldn't tell her that. I didn't tell her at all. But really, the best thing was lasted so goddamn long.
Did she call her mom?
No. I just said I didn't have any change. So we kept walking. We tried to sober up. And I remember being at Joe Jr.'s, this place, this little diner on 6th Avenue. And we had grilled cheese and coffee, as we ordered. We couldn't lift our coffee cups because the acid was cut with strychnine. So we had to put our heads down to drink the coffee. And
what do you mean? Your muscles were spasming or something?
Yeah, we just had. Yeah, we had no strength.
Can I dispel something very quickly?
Sure.
So they did a study. So this is an urban. So a lot of people say acid gets cut with strychnine, uh-huh. right? So they did a study because this is one of the urban myths about acid is it's cut with strychnine. So they did a study where they sent all these tabs of acid to test them for strychnine.
Uh-huh.
They found no strychnine.
God. So what was it? So, it's part of a something from the acid that makes that you can't.
So you're some.
It paralyzes you.
It was explained to me that LSD gets there's a filtration process that uh-huh. happens or some kind of. I don't understand the chemistry and it's a very difficult to synthesize LSD. But apparently, there's a just like any like alcohol or whatever, it goes through a filtration process where impurities are removed from the whatever the substance is, and if the acid hasn't gone through enough of this, then there's going to be impure. It's not going to be clean, as it's called. Or also, LSD is very photosensitive, apparently. It's so tiny that photons degrade the chemical bonds in it, which means that if you have LSD that has been exposed to sunlight, if you have LSD that hasn't been kept in good conditions, then all of these things can lead to the kind of like what a lot of people are like, man, this shit's got a lot of strychnine in it, man.
Oh, how funny. You know? You mean maybe having it in our friend's jeans next to his, you know, sweaty sack wasn't the best way to then put it on your tongue?
That's what it is. Just people are like, shit, man, look at this acid I got. Open it up in broad daylight.
Oh, man. I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
But the great way, I mean, one of the best parts of that whole trip was, I said, Linda, are you feeling any better? Because we're eating, we're drinking coffee and just trying so hard to just get back to reality.
Yeah.
And do as you said, is not like slip into, we just wanted, it was so stupid because we were afraid that we were really losing ourselves so much. We were afraid of what would happen or whatever. And she said, I'd feel a lot better if the grilled cheese wasn't wrapping around my neck.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys were like, just this is what we all do, man. You take this incredible medicine.
And then you try like hell to stop it from happening, from the effects.
You put your heels down, you resist all the way, even though this thing is just, it's like, you know what it's like? It's like something is trying to carry you into paradise. and you are digging your claws in and just, but to get into paradise, you got to die. And this is just the way it works, you know, in every single story, spiritual story, everything is like, you must first die to this world to come to know me. And when a drug is making, and this is the bad trip, I've had these trips, man, I'm dying.
Did you ever forget what you were doing or your name or any, like, did you let it go so
full merging?
Yeah.
Yeah. Once on this, like, God, it's the best trip I ever had. Oh, man. Way, way back in the day. I was very young. And, like, we got just this, the LSD was liquid.
Mm.
It had just been made, apparently. This is LSD that had just been created, so it was fresh acid. Then,
like those little places by the side of the street, like the taffy that you get along the side of the road.
Yeah,
like I'd stop if I saw fresh acid.
Fresh acid, right? And on sugar cubes. And because a lot of times when people have taken LSD, they haven't even taken LSD. They've taken something that is similar to LSD, but isn't LSD.
Oh, yeah, I would never know.
So this was LSD. Uh-huh. And I think I've had, like, LSD this pure only a few times in my life. And I've had a lot of acid trips. But this was, like, my God. It was just, we went to some party. They were playing kirtan, which at the time I didn't even know what it was, but it was like people singing Hare Krishna. And it was just like, oh, it was just so beautiful. Everything was beautiful and perfect and sweet and just wonderful. And like went back to my girlfriend's house at the time and like we had sex. And
was
like,
she on it?
Yeah, she was on it. We were both on it. Okay. And like, it's like the sex was like psychedelic sex where, like, we're having sex, but I was not having sex. I was in a primeval village going down to the river and getting water in some kind of clay pot and bringing it back to this, like, hut. And I wasn't the person carrying the water, but I was the water, and I was the container, and I was the person, and I was the hut.
So it was like your penis was on automatic.
Yeah, well, it was like, yeah, like the sex was not, it was something else. And then after that, we're sitting and she like puts on like some kind of, I can't remember, the Beethoven or Bach, or I can't remember which, I wish I could remember what it was. It's classical music, and I'm listening and I'm like following the notes, and the notes just seem so perfect. And then it's, and thinking like, who's following the notes? Whoa. Who's following this music? What is the one doing the thinking here? Who is thinking this? And then it was like, I was gone. The merging happened that you hear about on psychedelics. It was like, I became everything at once. A perfect moment of just the most tranquil, sweet peace.
Jeez.
And it was beautiful. That's the best trip I ever had. It was very good LSD. This is why you have to be careful about the type of acid that you're getting, you know, you have.
I know. Well, I remember, I mean, on that, the one I did, I really panicked and I asked my friend, I said, what am I here? What am I in New York to do? Why am I here? And she said, you're a stand-up comic. And I remember thinking, oh, fuck. Why would I do that? That's so impossible. Yeah. What a fucking thankless thing.
Yeah, look, and it's great because it's liberating you at that time, because it's showing you like you're not this thing. You've decided to say you're this thing, and you're saying that this is what I am. No one's any one thing.
Right.
No one's anything at all. And a psychedelic will really help you just witness the game that you're playing, and that you've, the make believe that you, you know, it's like when we go out, if you're a kid and you go into the playground and you start pretending to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful because you know you're not.
Until you get shot by a cop.
On the playground, which probably happens. But, you know, everyone's so committed to these fucking roles. And the psychedelic, man, it's so good at freeing you from that. But if you're very attached to your role, whatever it may be, then that's the bad trip. And most people are very attached to staying alive. You know, most people don't want to die. It all is terrible, terrifying. Worst thing that can happen to you in a movie is to die, right?
Right.
It's the worst. So the trip, the psychedelic generally, if it's offering you a death, take it.
Of course.
Because you're not really going to die. Your physical body isn't going to die. No one's, as far as I'm aware, no one's OD'd. No one's died on LSD. There's cases of people who, if you look on Arrowhead, there is an example where apparently somebody thought that they were doing cocaine, mm-hmm. but it was some kind of powdered acid. Ooh. So they snorted just an insane amount of LSD. Whoa. Because we have very few cases of an actual overdose, and they started hemorrhaging. But that's the amount they took was
right.
a million times more than a dose. So there's those. My point is, if you're on a psychedelic and you think you're dying, more than likely you're not dying. Mm-hmm. You're physically not dying, but your ego is dying. And so if you can just let it kill you. Once I was on mushrooms watching The Simpsons, like laying in bed and a cramp had started in my foot and was mm-hmm. moving up my leg. And I knew when the cramp got to my heart that I would die for sure. I'm like, as soon as this cramp gets to my heart, I'm over, man. Yeah. But The Simpsons are on and it's really funny. So I'm like in the midst of this dying. I'm laughing my ass off. It was very funny because I go from like, I'm dying, this is over, to like, oh, this is so hilarious. Yeah. It's really cool. Really cool. So yeah, die if you can on the psychedelic, but please don't really die. But you won't really die. You won't. If you do die, you're going to make the history books. So congrats for that. You will be remembered after you die because you'll be the one person who succumbed to mushrooms.
It's funny how afraid we are to give up control, even when that's the point of doing it in the first place. You still, when you're in it, you don't want to.
You don't want it.
Most people, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want it. You don't want to give up control. You don't want to, you're just so into like this illusion of being in charge that you don't want to like deal with the fact that you're not really in charge and you're not really anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're definitely not really anything. You're just this mist of atomic particles saying it's something. It's really funny though. It's really funny that we're these mists of atomic particles that are going around. They're so into like this thing called being a human. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're really committed to this shit, man. Like you can't back out. You got it, unless you want to kill yourself. You really are in some way have to be, but you can't. It's so funny. My dog, it's like when I put a bandana on my dog, uh-huh. I'm pretty sure like when we take the dogs to the groomers, they put these bandanas on. Uh-huh. And maybe I'm projecting, but I think they're proud. Like they know they have the bandana on and they're kind of...
I know. I like to think that too. I try to make a big deal out of it. You know, when my dog gets out, I have a song. Here he is, Mr. Mixed Breed America. Because, you know, they are possibly having a mixed, you know, like I guess like some of the dog shows, they were saying they're about to have mixed breeds.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Maybe they, I don't know. Finally. If they ever did. Yeah. And so, but he will walk up and down like he's parading. Like,
and it's adorable, right?
Yeah.
It's adorable. But when a human parades themselves, it's somehow noxious or something. And when mm-hmm. we do it, but it's ultimately just hilarious. Like, you know, when someone gets an award and cries, uh-huh. or when someone is like just inflated themselves, or when someone's wearing really expensive clothes, mm-hmm. because we're forced to be a human, there's something in it that we're supposed to take seriously. But when you just pull away just a little bit, it's so fucking adorable, man.
Now, that's such a sweet way to actually think of it. I mean, that's such a nice way to... Like, I was watching an ad that I thought was a parody, and I think it was for, you know, the new, you know, the spring Givenchy, and it had these, like, little pops of people in, of models, like these black and white photos of models, and it said, life, and fun, and poetry, and I thought, I feel like I'm watching a joke, I'm watching this thing, but it was... it was real, and
it's hilarious. We're the most. It's like. Have you seen the new videos coming? Like, there's a new video where they think chimpanzees may have started developing ritual, that they might be doing ritual. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh wow, it's cool, man. It's like they. I guess they started finding all these rocks around trees, mm-hmm. and for some reason, chimpanzees have started running up to trees. Uh-huh. Throwing rocks against the trees and doing it in a kind of ritualistic way, where a chimp will come to a tree, uh-huh. climb up on it, go rah, rah, throw the rock and then run. But they're all doing it. So it's like they think, whoa, is this the beginning of like, is this how like ancient religion starts? Is just some kind of like, we don't know why they're doing it or what's in their heads, but they're definitely doing it ritualistically. And it's hilarious because it's a chimp and like it's just cute and meaningless. Mm-hmm. And like, but when a person, God, like I was watching the Catholic channel, fun. But you know, like they're carrying the Bible, uh-huh. they're wearing a funny hat and they're holding the Bible above their head and yeah. like walking around with yeah. the book open. It's like, adorable.
How did that ever happen? How did that become the, yeah.
It's fucking crazy. God, he's adorable. Like if I came home and my poodle mm-hmm. had figured out a way to stand on his legs and was like carrying one of his toys around ritualistically, uh-huh. adorable. That would
not
be
not scary.
Okay, that'd be
not horrifying.
That would be horrifying. Now I think about it, I'd fucking have him put to sleep immediately. Yeah. My dog's got a demon. Like if your dog, you're right, that would be terrifying. If your dog started wearing robes and like a funny golden hat with like mm-hmm. jewels on it. Oh, Jesus, parading around like in the, oh my God. Like if you came home and your dog was wearing robes and your mm-hmm. other animals were sitting around the dog listening to it like it knew what it was saying.
Mm-hmm. And then they all looked at you when you walked in the door and you'd be like, oh, no.
And stopped. Like they're when you not... walked in, they stopped. They looked at you and just stopped whatever it was they
you're
were doing.
You're the problem.
Fuck.
You're our fucking problem.
That would be scary.
Keeping us down.
Keeping us down. Shit, you're right. There is something less adorable about it when you think about it that way. There's something really just kind of dark and vile. I guess you got to pick what window you want
to
look through,
I know.
Through,
allow
right?
me to bring in the hell window whenever I can.
Oh, God, though. No, you're right. Like, in that way, it's like really – there's actually – my friend just sent me – somebody went to a Trump rally on acid, and they were writing about what it was like, the mistake that they made, like how they all realized they just made a big mistake. Yeah.
Did his face do things? Or
yeah, they're saying there's the breathing effect that was happening. There's just this underlying sense of anger everywhere.
I mean, oh no, I meant like Trump's face. Did it turn morph into anything?
I think they were saying it was like that. Like his hairpiece with his hair, you could see his hairpiece was like breathing or something.
Ooh.
Yay! Shit, Laura, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
On the show.
Thank you.
It's so great chatting with you. You got to start doing this more often. This
I would
so
love
fun.
To.
Great. And where can people find you? And what are you up to? What's
You're
going on?
An angel. I'm going to, thank you for asking. I will be at the Draft House in D.C.
Arlington Draft House.
Yes, uh-huh. And with these two guys that I really look forward to meeting. I just looked them up and they're really funny. The Lucas Brothers. They're twins and they're
cool.
funny. Yeah.
They do like a team act?
I think so. Yeah.
They're like a comedy duo.
Right.
Of twins. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. It's like the Sklar brothers, right? They're twins.
Right.
So it's like a version of that. No, it's not that. I'm not saying they're ripping off the Sklar. They copy the Sklar brothers. They made themselves twins.
You know, I used to have this bit about how men like twins. Some, you know, like that's sort of a perversion and that
yeah.
it's not okay to like twins because they're actually twins, that's, you know, incest. And I said, you know, I really felt creeped out about it until the Sklars invited me home one night and they took off their clothes in front of me and licked each other's nipples. And anyway, I went on to this one. Anyway, I used to do this. The first time I did that bit, though, I was at the Largo, the one that was on Fairfax?
Yeah, that was great.
And the first time I did that, Flanagan, the owner, came up and he was bent over laughing and he had tears in his eyes and I was like, what? And he said, their grandparents are in the front row. And I said, yeah, that was the first time I did that bit and then I was really happy.
Well, Laura,
anyway, sorry to bring up my thing
hilarious.
About twins, but I am really looking forward to the same thing happening with the Lucas Brothers.
I think it's going to. Friends, go see Laura. She's a brilliantly funny comedian. I'm going to have links to her stand-up and her Twitter at DuncanTrussell.com. Thanks a lot, Laura. Hare
Thank
Krishna.
You.
Thanks for listening, folks, and a big thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. If you go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off your first order. Thank you, Laura Keitlinger, for joining us. To find out more about Laura, go to her website at laurakeitlinger.com or you can follow her on Twitter at King Keitlinger. All of these links will be at duncantrussell.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not give us a nice rating on iTunes? And because I forgot to say it in the beginning, thank you to all of you who continue to support the podcast. I love you guys, and I hope you have an amazing week. Keep your eyes peeled for another episode with Al Madrigal later in the week, and I hope to see you out there on the Squarespace Presents You Are God comedy tour. And don't forget, if you like this podcast, give us a nice rating on iTunes and bookmark our Amazon portal. Or don't do any of that. Just listen, and thank you. I'll see you soon.